Nyalak Hadich, Wajik Nyunga Mort, Kayan Kadak Nija Wajik Buja. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to country, sky and waterways. We pay our respect to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples listening today. Welcome to Nyunga Wellbeing. I'm your host, Brooke Collard. I'm a Baladong Wajik Nyunga woman, and in this season of Nyunga Wellbeing, I'll be speaking to the next generation of leaders, young people of the Nyunga community, about a Nyunga perspective on self and community care.
Chikara Woolley comes from the Bunuba and Jaru Kimberley mob from her mother's side and Bindreb Nyunga from her father's side. She graduated from the Aboriginal Theatre course at the WA Academy of Performing Arts, WAPA, in 2007. In 2013, she graduated from SIE Institute with a Bachelor of Arts in Film Production. Chikara worked in theatre ranging from acting, writing, directing and producing from 2007 through to 2016. In 2020, Chikara was an Indigenous consultant on the web series development / writer's room for Gold Diggers with Kojo Productions. She took a gap from the arts to work with incarcerated youth where she taught about healthy relationships and respect for yourself and others.
We've both worked in the creative industries. Mm-hmm. You've been wrangled back in again. Because it's that classic thing of you get burnout from trying to just push and push, and like it's hard doing it on your own, especially when there's not much funding and everything. Mm-hmm. For yourself, what was some things that you did to kind of like help yourself from that burnout?
Well, going into arts, I thought burning out was normal because that's kind of what you get told, is you work until you kind of exhausted. Or I'd watch people and they'd work themselves into exhaustion because it's contract work at the end of the day. I kind of learned about burnout when I did my youth work and the importance of taking care of your mental health. So finding that healthy balance between your life and your workplace, and how work's always going to be there, even though that's something we get told as artists, is like if an opportunity comes up, take it, because you don't know when that's going to come up again, and that can lead to your next job and then your next job. But I'm learning now that I'm older that jobs will always be there. Your health kind of is paramount, or you have to look after your health. And I think knowing what the signs are for burning out as well. So I wasn't as social as I was because, you know, I'm an introvert, so it depends who I'm with. I wasn't as social. I was sleeping a lot more. I lost my appetite kind of thing, and my body was sending out all these kind of signals, or, you know, red signs to slow down. But my mind was like, no, you got to keep going because you don't know. So I think learning what the signals are and giving yourself permission as well to kind of step back and say, no, I need a breather, because I struggle with that. Like just recently I had to take a week off work and I was negotiating with my doctor about how much time I needed off. Like that's bad.
Yeah, I've just gone a little too far.
So I'm still learning, but I'm getting better at it kind of thing. So yeah, I think those three things are important: recognizing the signs, giving yourself permission, and knowing that work will always be there.
Yeah, because like you said, it is really hard. And when you are working in something that you're passionate about, you take your work home. Yeah. I've done that too, where even with my current job, you know, I've basically got a 9-to-5 now. But outside those hours, I'm still working on like my own projects as well. So I'm basically doing 12-hour days every day. And it's that classic thing that as soon as you stop, you just collapse or you get sick. So every time you're like, okay, like I'm obviously not as in tune with it as you are, where you're like, oh, all these red flags are coming up. It's time to hit the brake.
I think my family could see it before I could see it as well. So that was a big help, because I think they're the ones who kind of hear it. When I was working as an independent producer, I remember my hours were from 5 in the morning till about 12 at night. And that was for 3 to 6 months at a time, because I had to keep up. I had to wake up early to have meetings with Sydney and then come back and make sure everything was kind of taken care of. And I was notorious for doing 2 jobs at the same time, kind of thing, and working trying to do 2 full-time jobs at the same time, which is not healthy. So you burn out quickly from that. But just learning, like after 5 now, my phone is not work, or learning to not have, like, even though I've got my emails on my phone, not to check it every 5 minutes as well, which is a habit that I do. Like some jobs I understand you have to be on call and all that stuff, but also limiting your time as well.
Because I feel like that's a classic saying with film, is like we're not saving lives. And you got to remember that sometimes because it gets so stressful. And, you know, you're just like, you're like, the world's going to end right now. What do I do? And you're a bit similar to me, I think, in where you're highly organized. So you're like, I can take on that extra work. Like, I can do it.
Yeah.
But then you're like so tired and you get so much done, but then you're like, at what cost? Yeah.
Because I remember after doing a project, I'd just crash for a couple of months and not talk to anyone or not socialize and just sleep, or my body was, and it wasn't a good rhythm I kind of got myself into. Whereas now I have more of a routine of what I do. So when I go home, I, you know, cook, or I have a shower, or I get ready for the next day. And then that's me kind of done.
Yeah. I kind of do that too, but that's more like just trying to survive with a toddler. You know, I'm like specifically like, okay, he has to be fed by 5:30. Otherwise he's going to lose it by this time. And then he's going to be ready for a bath at the latest by 6:30. And then he's going to be in bed by 7.
Yeah.
And, he's been pushing it with sleep though. So that's extra been making me go a bit crazy.
Oh, Bubby.
You know, he's a FOMO baby. So he's like, oh, but I can hear people talking out there. I'm missing out on whatever's happening there. And you're like, no, you're not. You're tired. Go to sleep.
Which is good in a way, because he's actually forcing you to have a routine and not think about work. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So it has been really good in that way, because the amount of times some people wanted to have a meeting with me after 4:30, and I have to go, nah, that's when I start the wind down routine with Karada. It's not happening.
Yeah. Sorry guys, I'm out. I've tapped out for the day.
Yeah.
And you do, because I feel like, especially in performing arts, you give so much of yourself as an artist. You just, sometimes you just don't have any more to give after a while.
Nah, that's it. And because you're a producer-writer and you've written, was it Aussie Bush Rangers? Aussie Rangers. Oh, yeah. So I loved that and I wanted more after I watched it. Mostly for everyone's performances, because they were so good. Because I think the animal was the quackamoot.
Quackacoot.
Yeah.
Which is a made-up animal.
I know when you said you wrote it, you based a lot of it off of like your family and what they're like. And I guess for yourself, when you're writing, like, do you feel like it's kind of therapeutic for you?
Yeah, they tell you as a writer, don't base anything off your family or
everyone,
or
does,
like therapeutic. Yeah. don't write for therapeutic reasons, because it's, if it gets up and running, then you're kind of stuck in this loop of watching your therapeutic stuff for everyone else to see and think. No, but I, with Aussie Rangers, I had a writing mentor and a few other people kind of helped me write that. So it was a group effort for sure. And then John Bell, when he came on board, because he's a writer as well, had a look at the script and I'm like, yeah, let's black this up. So
yeah.
And then Kelly Cross, who was my director, she had her take on it as well. So a lot of the little gags and everything in there is partly them. But no, I'm very proud of Aussie Rangers.
I wanted to ask you too, because you were working with youth a lot, you're kind of coming in as like that auntie role in that last job, because you're there to kind of offer, you know, your nuggets of wisdom to them.
I hope it was nuggets of wisdom.
Yeah.
It was more me growling at them every 5 seconds.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, that's why you need the auntie energy in those spaces, I think. But how did you find, you know, especially talking about healthy relationships to younger people, like how did conversations like that usually go down?
It was interesting at times having this conversation with their young people, and I would never bring it up. They'd always come to me and ask, because they were having issues with their boyfriend or their girlfriend, or just a little one, like the off the cusp remark about something that would happen. And I'd be like, well, that's not healthy.
Yeah.
And then they'd look at me like, well, what do you mean? Mm. And so I'd have to explain, well, if the person really did love you, they wouldn't do this, or that looks like a red flag.
Mm.
But to them, because they have seen it or they've grown up around it, like the toxic relationship, they kind of mimic that behavior. Mm. So they don't know any differently. And then when someone challenges them on that, they're like, well, no, you're wrong.
Yeah.
I'm right.
Mm.
What would you know? So a lot of my conversations were kind of around healthy relationships, communication, kind of what was acceptable, what wasn't acceptable in terms of how they relate to each other. An example where some of my young girls were talking about like DV and how it's normal for their boyfriend to hit them. I was like, no, it's not. Mm. They're like, no, but it is. That means that he loves you.
Mm.
I'm like, well, where did you get that from?
Yeah.
Like, well, my auntie said, or my uncle said, or my nana said.
Yeah.
It's like, well, are there any other people, you know, that you can think of where they role model a healthy behavior? And you're like, not really. And then you think about, okay, well, what mentors are out there that could help them with that? What celebrities are we looking at, or what singers are we looking at, or rappers that are modeling this behavior for our kids? Because most of the young people identify with American hip hop culture.
Yeah. And that's where they're hearing a lot of that.
That's where they're hearing a lot of it.
Mm.
But they're also seeing their mums or their dads or their uncles, aunties, cousins, whoever, you know, from the age of 10, where they start getting into these relationships, they're just literally mimicking what they see.
Mm.
And it was interesting for me kind of sitting back, having learnt, you know, right or wrong relationships, kind of challenging them on that. Does get disheartening after a while because you're hearing the same thing or it's the same conversation after a while. But I think it's important to at least plant that seed there so that later on in life, hopefully, they understand that, hey, maybe I was right.
Yeah.
Or at least, you know, but it's hard sometimes because it's easy for me to say it looking into it.
Yeah.
But then actually going through it is a totally different. I think you and I were talking about this the other day. Mm. It's totally different when you're experiencing it and you can't really see because you're so used to a pattern or a pattern of behavior that, it's two things really. It's a pattern of behavior and there's also that little bit of hope that things will go back to how it first started kind of thing. And so that's kind of how that cycle keeps going.
It's interesting though, because like, you know, you think about even things like your brain, like the frontal lobe isn't fully developed until you're 25. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie. As soon as I turned 25, it was like my brain went, oh, I'm so embarrassed of every single action I've done in my life until this point.
Yeah. I'm 37 now and I still think about I think back in my 20s, I'm like, what the heck was I thinking? Or even my teens. But because that's all you know, you think you know it all.
Yeah.
I mean, I look at my nieces and my nephews now who are around that age. I'm like, wow, the attitude I had of myself is, ridiculous.
And it's hard too because I feel like now as well, sometimes like a lot of the language, like people are more aware of how you're speaking impacts the way your brain like works and gets rewired. And, you know, there's actually been studies that trauma rewires your brain.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because I was saying this to you earlier, but so my grandparents were in a DV relationship. And so my mum was so like hyper aware to keep us away from anything like that at all. So she really like sheltered us and protected us. So it's only like as I've become an adult, you know, I ask her questions where I'm like, you know, how did you handle that situation? And, you know, she'll say something like she was kept up all night and like barely made it through an exam when it was a big deal to her. And, you know, still like held her dad in like a high regard, even though they were in that kind of relationship. And it's hard, hey, because like he did change the way he was after. And he was like the most amazing grandfather ever. Like I always like praise him.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because I grew up with him as the best version of himself.
Yes.
It's hard. Like, you know, you're talking to young people about these kinds of things. And if they are like perpetrators early on in life, like trying to help show them that they can change and like be better as well.
It is hard, especially if that mindset's there and they feel like that's the only pathway for them forward. It's like that thing with, I guess, addicts as well. You can offer them help, but unless they want that help themselves, then they're going to take it. Or unless they want to make that change for themselves for the better and they know that they're surrounded by support and that there's a way out, so to speak, then it's kind of like talking to a brick wall.
Yeah.
At length. And like I said, I think in my old workplace, I just came to the mentality that I couldn't fix anything or anyone. All I could do was plant seeds and then hope that later on in life they'll catch on, because that's what I had with mentors and everyone like that in my life kind of thing. I mean, because we all make mistakes and I've made quite a lot. But I think the difference between that is the mindset. Like my nan and pop, they went through hardships growing up on the mission and everything like that. And with my nan, we found it was her mindset of how she dealt with situations, difficult situations. So she always saw a solution and she didn't see it as the problem.
Mm.
And she would always come up with a way out or, yeah, some way to fix it. And it was always in a kind of a positive light. Mm. It was never in a negative light. So I think with that, with her and then my mum and then me having mentors around me, I've always had that where there's always, and I think that's why I became a producer, there's always a solution.
Mm.
There's always, and if you don't, and there's more than one way to skin a cat, supposedly. So, like even me, I always have a backup plan to my backup plans.
Mm.
And I always think of my way out. Because of that, sometimes when I'm talking to people who, sometimes I have to check myself because I forget sometimes that people don't think like I do.
Because like we were talking about setting boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
For yourself and between other people, because like you don't want to, like it's not just a thing of like letting people like cross your boundaries, but it's like respecting yourself too and not just being like a people pleasing person to make people happy around you all the time.
Yeah. And I think because I was a massive yes person or a people pleaser, and I think that just came through my childhood. But it took me a very long time to kind of set boundaries with people and say no and learn that saying no was okay and it wasn't a reflection of them, but more so setting a boundary was more so my I keep safe and making sure I'm okay, because, you know, as a yes person, you're always making sure everyone else is okay. And then I used to get upset when I felt like no one was there for me, but that was because I was trying to, and I used to project my expectations on other people. So if I was like, okay, well, I'm doing this for you, you should be doing exactly the same for me, like equal bounds. But then I realized that that doesn't happen.
Yeah. So absolutely.
And people can only meet you where they're at, kind of thing. So lots of life lessons I've learned. Yeah, setting boundaries and kind of being, I'm at that stage in my life now where I'm being selfish and I'm putting myself first, which I haven't done. So I still get overwhelmed. Like I'll text mom every now and then and be like, mom, I'm really overwhelmed. What do I do? But for me, I learned, I think it was about 7 years ago, I started getting anxiety attacks and stuff. So I was like, nah, I need to see a psych because this is beyond what I'm capable of. Like I don't have any skills in this. So I started seeing a psych regularly, which I highly recommend, and I know there's a taboo against it, but how I figured it was they have the tools that they can teach me, and that's one of the things I told my psych was I don't want a bitching session. I don't want to gossip. I'm here to learn how I can become a better version of myself.
Yeah,
and I need tools, so can you please teach me? So it was great because he was teaching me kind of self-awareness. And being able to just talk to someone who I know who can trust, who won't go and tell the rest of the family or tell your friends or, you know, because we've all had that happen to us in life. But he kind of set that up for me where I could start trusting people in a way and becoming like a safe place for me. So that kind of set up the trajectory or the pathway that I'm on now in terms of looking after my mental health and making sure I'm okay first, because going back to being a people pleaser, I used to make sure everyone else was okay. And that took a lot out of me because I would disappear, isolate, and my friends would get offended by it. I'm like, no, nothing's wrong. Like I'd get sick because I, you know, overdoing it. And I think we were talking about burnouts before. I think you can also get burnt out socializing with your friends and not looking after yourself as well. It's on this journey of discovery, I think, where I'm learning to say no more and kind of taking care of my own needs, which is scary for me because I'm not used to it. I'm not used to saying looking after myself or putting myself first.
I'm a big advocate for therapy as well, because I've grown up a bit similar where you just kind of like chin up, keep going.
Oh, yeah.
You just ignore the problem, but yeah, you just like keep going.
Yeah.
And so like for myself, I hadn't really gone to therapy before, but after I had my son, I had a lot of birth trauma because yeah. I had a uterine inversion. Mm. So that actually means my uterus got pulled out. So at the time I had this newborn, so I was like, I just got to keep going, like got to focus on making sure he's okay, completely neglected making sure I was okay. And then it was only like maybe 2 years down the track that I was at the doctor's, and then I was just like bawling my eyes out just from talking about giving birth, that they kind of went, you should probably go talk to someone, because it was like, we didn't even go that in depth to what happened to me. And I was just crying, just talking about it. And the fact that I can talk to you about it fine now without bawling my eyes out is because I went to therapy.
Yeah.
You know, so I went and I did EMDR, if you've heard of that. It's like the light thing that you follow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, oh, how is this going to help anything? But then I was just watching this light just like track back and forth. And then like I was just bawling my eyes out watching this light go past. And I was like, what is going on in my brain right now? I was like, I'm no better than a plant. I just need light. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's part of meditation, because I do that as well. Like I'll go down to the beach. Mm. I'm not a beach person, but it's water. Water kind of helps me. And I found that back down in Perth, in Bunbury, at Honeymoon Pool, I was going through a lot of stuff at the time, and my sister decided we're going to go camping. So we went there, and as soon as I sat in the water, I could literally, like spiritually and physically and emotionally, just feel everything being taken and washed away as soon as I sat in the river. So water is important for me. I don't know why, because I'm a land person. But meditation, really, really helps with that. Like even mum used to say to me as a kid, just go have a shower. You'll be fine. Your attitude will change. Yeah. And it did.
Yeah.
So maybe it's going back to that, drawing back to that as a kid. Because I think especially as women, you get told, like you said, chin up or move on. And I remember we got taught, not by my family, but by other mentors that I had, if something's going wrong in your life, then the way to fix it is to help other people.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's true.
Yeah.
A lot of people say that.
Yeah. So, which kind of helped for a bit.
Mm.
But then I found that I wasn't actually looking after myself. So I wasn't actually addressing anything that was going on. I was just kind of covering it up by like, okay, I'll help you. And I'll like distract. It's a form of distraction, which, yes, can help. But unless you actually sit down and you take a look at yourself, or you try and figure out what's actually going on, like why are you crying in the middle of the night? Why are you eating chocolate so much, Shakara?
Yeah, yeah.
It kind of got me to examine why I was the way I was and what I could do to kind of better it, if that makes sense. I'm still working on myself. I'm not like 100% for sure. There's still, areas in my life where I'm like, oh, okay, I really do need to work on it, and just ignore it, because it's easier to do that, or it's easier to have unhealthy coping strategies and bury it down rather than think. But I'm learning that having good coping strategies, and actually one of my favorite motivational speakers, he's like, in life, when you come up with a problem, you can either run towards it and face it head on, or you can run away from it. So I've always had that kind of philosophy now in the last couple of years, is not that I'm a confrontational person. I stand my ground. I was like, you know me, I'm quite lovely. No, but I'm not afraid of to have that talk with someone if something's going wrong, or I'm not afraid to examine that, because I think, again, it comes back to communication, where I'd rather know where I stand with you than play a guessing game. And I'm a massive overthinker, so I'll come up with all these different scenarios in my head as to why you're not talking to me, rather than actually understand or get a walk in your shoes for a bit to understand why you're that. And I think, again, that just goes back to acting days when I did a course with Rick Brayford, because we learned psychology in a bit, in a way, where we used to do this exercise, I think, where it's like you're trying to get something off someone, but you have to ask them in this particular way.
Oh, yeah. I've done that before too.
Yeah, so you try and, not manipulate, that's the wrong word to use, but you try and find different ways of, like, you can either be nice, you can try and squeeze it out of them, or you can try, try these different things. So I kind of took that to people in a way, and understanding how people work and how they function, I think also helps with how you treat people.
Yeah, because in the end, it's all about putting yourself in other people's shoes, really. Yeah. Just like to have that compassion in general.
Oh, empathy for sure. Empathy, yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, I find it interesting what you're saying, because I know for myself, I'm a bit similar where like if I feel like something is a bit off, I'll like not confront, like not confrontational energy, but no. I'll go up to them and be like, hey, like I feel like you're being a bit funny with me. Have I done something?
Yeah.
Some people take that the wrong way, yeah. You know? So like have you found that sometimes?
Yeah. Yeah, they do. They think that I'm being aggressive. I'm not. It's just very emotional when I do it because, again, I'm not used to doing that.
Yeah.
It's a new skill that I'm teaching myself. Because I had a very bad habit of if I felt something was off, I'd just cut you off.
Yeah, I used to do that too, yeah.
And not talk to that person for years.
Yeah.
But now I'm learning I can voice that and still to say, like, I need my space.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. But it is hard. I think learning to confront a problem or have a talk to a person about a situation that's going on is a skill in itself. Because, yeah, there's different ways of approaching it. And you can be diplomatic about it. You can be aggressive. You can be passive. I always think about, again, producing mind, I always think about what's going to be the outcome here. Do I want this person in my life or don't I?
Yeah, yeah. And I think people should take it as a compliment if you are coming up to try to resolve it, because it's like you obviously value them. Yeah, you know, well, but some people don't take it that way.
No.
So it's definitely interesting for sure because, yeah, I've gotten that before. I used to just like cut people off because I was like, nah, it's too hard to just discuss what's going on.
They know
on.
What they've done wrong. Yeah. I don't have to explain myself. Yeah, that was my mindset too.
Yeah. But no, it's definitely hard because I found like one thing for me anyway is just that the power of the breath is so huge because like you feel like anger and everything rise in you sometimes and you just have to like take that moment like – to take the deep breath and calm yourself down. Cause, I did Wiley a few years ago so that, Western Australian Aboriginal Leadership Institute,
which my nan runs.
Oh, really?
Beautiful. Nana Robin.
Yeah. It's so good. Cause like, I remember there was one thing they said and it was about, whenever there's conflict going on, you can either be in the dance floor with everyone's on the same level and you can't see exactly what's going on because you're in the middle of it.
Yep.
Or you can put yourself on the balcony to observe and kind of go, okay, like I've got to distance myself from this right now to assess how to handle it. And that's always been a big thing. And I find I do that when you take that moment, when there's a high emotion, you take the deep breath first because that's putting yourself on the balcony.
Yeah.
And also like, I don't know if I've already said this on the podcast so far. I don't think I have. But I'm really into looking at like gentle parenting methods. Because I think there's definitely like ways to do it where it's not passive parenting, but those skills are so transferable to dealing with other adults because you've got to remember like sometimes that's like that person's reality of what's going on. So to them, like you might have said something that to you wasn't offensive because you're like, oh, I was just having a joke, like we're mucking around. But to them it like hit a sore point and they're like really upset.
And they're not getting offended when they say that is another big key as well.
Because
I've had people say that to me, like, oh, what you said really offended me. And so I could be like, well, that's your problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I could, what I've done lately is go, okay, well, I'm trying to see it from your point of view. I apologize about that.
Yeah.
Let's fix it.
Yeah. And that's huge because a lot of people can't do that because I've had to do that before too where someone said something to me because they were overwhelmed. And to me, it made me really upset and I had to take that deep breath and kind of go, I'm really sorry that's how you interpreted that because that wasn't my intention.
Yep.
But, you know, I take that on to like not say that again.
Well, the other thing is accountability.
Yeah.
It's taking accountability for what you act. And I find a lot of people don't do that, which frustrates me because I have to do it. So why can't you do it? I'm trying to learn how to be an adult. Why can't you do it?
Meet me at my level.
Meet me at my level. Come up. Don't make me go down.
Yeah.
But Accountability is another one, because I find people find it really easy to blame everyone else for their actions instead of saying, actually, I stuffed up on that.
Yeah.
My bad. How can I learn from that? But the breathing technique that you're talking about, or stepping back, I've been doing that recently where I'm like, I can't address this issue with you right now. I need a break.
Yeah.
Let me talk to you when my temper's, because I've got a hot temper.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not gonna think anything about it. I do have a hot temper. So like, don't talk to me right now, because I will say something I regret.
Yeah, like, I don't want to yell at you right now. I will
say on purpose to hurt you.
Yeah.
Because I'm back in the old ways.
Yeah.
So what I do now is, like, can we have this conversation when I'm in a better mindset to actually process? Because I need, what I find is I need time to process what's going on.
Yeah.
Because that's how I function and that's how I work. And so I'm straight up about it. I'm like, let me process it. And then let me, like, I will do note points if I need to when we have this discussion. Like, we'll sit down and we'll talk it through. Because, again, before I went through my healing phase, my underhealed version. I mean, I was yelling and screaming and I was not, I was terrible and actually embarrassed about that. But I'm learning, you know, it's the old black fella woman in me.
Yeah.
Like, don't make me come out.
Yeah. It's hard because, like you said, sometimes that's what you grew up with and you're like, oh, this is obviously how you have to communicate with each other to make change happen. For people to hear me, I have to talk like this.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it takes a moment of, like, once you get older to kind of go, okay, like, that's not healthy for me to talk to people like that and for them to talk to me like that. So, you know, if someone is giving you that energy as well, it's okay to be like, hey, like, I don't feel comfortable with the way you're talking to me right now. Can we come back to this as we both calm down?
Yeah, yeah. And it's not anything bad. It's, again, like, you value the relationship or the friendship or whatever it is, or you value that person and you want to make sure that you do it correctly instead of, because what I hate is when people say stuff and then they come back and apologize. Like, well, actually, what are you apologizing about?
Yeah, yeah.
The fact that you got angry or that you said stuff, like, be specific so then we can address it.
Yeah.
And that's another thing I say as well is, like, yeah, if you apologize, actually, Mum used to say this to us as me and my sisters. If you apologize to each other, you got to know why you're apologizing.
Yeah.
Because then that way you can move forward. Otherwise, we just keep doing exactly the same thing over and over again and nothing's been addressed kind of thing.
Yeah. And also mean it too.
And mean it.
Yeah. You're going to mean it. It's going to come from your heart.
Yeah. Say it when you're level headed and you've actually thought things through. Like, oh, yeah. And no, I did go too far. Sorry
about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually work on. So I'm not just saying things. I do practice these stuff that I say. Actually work on what it is that you've talked about. So if it's communication style, work on that. If it's an action that the other person found offensive, work a way around, like, find something, that medium, happy medium, where you both can kind of move forward together. Because if you don't address it, the person's always going to be a little bit resentful.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't want that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, like, I'm just thinking of the trip I was just on, you know, there's people who, you know, just have different requirements for communication too. And, you know, you don't know what's going on in someone's life at that time. So they're, what's it called? It's the window of tolerance. Their window of tolerance might be really, really low. So sometimes, like, that's what I have to say to Gary, my partner, like when he's trying to, like, tell me something and I'm so burnt out. I don't have the energy. He's pitching, like, this new, like, TV series idea to me and I have to go, I'm really sorry, my darling. Like, I love you a lot, but my window of tolerance is here right now and I kind of can't take this on right now. Like, can you talk to me about this later?
Yeah.
When I can, like, talk to you properly about it.
I say the same thing. So whenever my family or my friends want to talk to me about something and I don't have the energy, I just say, look, I don't have the emotional capacity to deal with that right now. Can we wait until I'm better, or can we wait until I'm ready to deal with it? Because I've got a lot going on and I just need space to kind of come back down to ground myself again, reset, and then I can address it properly. Otherwise, I just get, like you said, my tolerance for bullshit snaps.
Yeah.
And I forget everything that I've been taught and I go back to, you know, old Shakara.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's a, and it's actually a phrase that my psychologist taught me, was, I don't have the emotional capacity to deal with that. Can I get back to you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just letting them know it's not you, it's me. kind of thing. Sometimes my family get offended, sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
But we're learning, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I find that I'm a very direct person as well. So I'll tell you what's happening straight off.
Yeah.
Whereas other people are very, we call it around the world or around, beat around the bush kind of thing. And I'm like, no, I got what you said in the first 5 seconds.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's something too. Some people don't like it when you speak directly to them. Like I know that's where I've gotten in trouble sometimes too.
Yeah, I get in trouble a lot for that.
Yeah, you know, because you're like, well, no, like what did you mean by that? Like, can you be honest with me right now? And they're like, whoa, like, you know, like they make a passive aggressive remark and then they don't expect you to actually want to address it. Yeah. Then and then you're like, no, like let's talk about that. Yeah,
pull up. What did you say?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
What did you mean when you said this?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I find that even though I'm direct, I'm also diplomatic about it.
Mm.
So I'll say, how would I want to be spoken to in that regard if they're feeling that way, which works and then sometimes it doesn't work.
Yeah, no, absolutely. What's some advice you would give to young people just for their well-being in general?
It's okay to seek help. It's okay to talk about it. Find mentors that will challenge you, even though you don't like it, and that will help you through life. And it's okay to say no, and it's okay to think about yourself sometimes.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Noongar Wellbeing with my guest Shikara Wally and me, Brooke Collard.
You can find more episodes at sbs.com.au/Noongar Wellbeing or follow the series in podcast apps like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the SBS Radio app. 4 to 1.